Minister!
Minister!
How are you? Minister, answer, how's your wife?
Answer the question, Minister!
Counterclockwise, thanks to scoop.co.nz.
Good afternoon, Selwyn.
Yeah, good afternoon, Will.
How are you going?
Not too bad.
Now, this week, there's a number of things to talk about, but we'll start off overseas, if you like. Of course, the biggest news story of the week, I suppose, has been what's going on in London. And what's been interesting to follow is how it's being characterized or talked about in you know, the different media sources over in the British press, who I suppose have the first-hand account.
Yeah.
But there seems to be a real divide between those people wanting to you know, describe it as a case of individual criminality on the part of the people involved in the unrest,
yep.
And on the other hand, people trying to look at sort of a wider social context to it. Who do you think's got the upper hand at the moment in the discussion?
Yeah, I think the Guardian has. You know, it's easy to say so because quite often it certainly does. But in this case, an article this morning where the Guardian was really evaluating both the political consequences, but also some of the underlying kind of causes that may be in evidence there in the UK. In London, for example, the Guardian, it made a big pitch that in Tottenham itself, where the riots began, the policies, the government policies had caused 75% cuts to the youth services area. And what that did was close many, many, many of the youth clubs and where many of the youth kind of connect to. So, you know, that was making a big pitch that there was a correlation between what we are seeing on our TV screens and what the British are suffering over there at the moment with the policies of the day, that these cuts were causing an effect there throughout society. Well, there was also another part too where the Guardian article that I'm referring to, it really, really, really put it into a position where it said, you know, the politicians of the day, they are not interested really in debating or examining what the causes of this, the underlying societal causes, because that in some way would implicate them, that they would be a part of that cause. And so their shift, if you like, and most politicians they were kind of identifying in this way, their shift was one into a retaliatory type of position and really trying to dominate. We are the tough ones. We are not going to lose face and we're going to use any, you know, thing in our disposal to actually stop these riots from occurring. So that to me, Will, in answering your question in a long-winded way, was the Guardian's on top with that.
It is interesting, I suppose. We had David Cameron fly back from his holiday in Italy and put on this tough face, say, you know, they'd be using all measures necessary.
Yeah.
But it was interesting to see the police tactics from the outset. And I don't know if this is just in light of what happened earlier in the year and last year with the student riots and the protests at that time and the police copping a lot of flak for their kind of really brutal treatment of the protesters.
Mm.
But they really did seem to sort of refrain from getting involved physically in the first instance. And they've been criticized for that by a lot of people. But at the same time, I suppose, you know, you could argue that they were doing a good job to not further inflame the situation.
You know, from some of the footage, I mean, obviously, you know, you and I are not there, so it's hard to kind of get a real feel for what's going on. But some of the footage kind of it is suggesting that the situation is so large, it's so problematic that the police were retreating rather than, you know, taking it on front on. If that was considered to be good tactics, well, you know, so be it. But many are saying it's not enough, you know, to protect the homes and the houses that were getting damaged. But the other thing is you cannot avoid that the spark that kind of ignited this whole thing, this whole show, if you like, was one where police obviously are involved with the killing of this 29-year-old individual, where more and more information that comes out via the Independent Police Complaints Commission in the UK suggests that, you know, the police were a little bit guarded with what the facts of the truth of the matter were. So that will be an interesting thing. But there's another thing too. If we're looking at the politics of it, you know, from that point of view, I do think, well, I should regress a little bit there. You know, obviously everybody that takes part in such a thing has a choice to do so. But underlying these kind of riots, and if we look at the UK, it does appear every time there's a societal shift where many in the younger age groups feel that they cannot reach their potential or they're unemployed, that the policies of the government are kind of impacting on that. They may not be politicised themselves, but if they feel like they're hard done by, well, you know, things go awry. There are other things too where you can see conservative governments that made slashing severe cuts in the past in the UK, like under Thatcher. You saw the Brixton riots occur at that same time. Was there a correlation between policy and, you know, the effect there? Some say yes. We've seen the same here, where a Conservative government has been advancing severe cuts into areas like youth again, and so perhaps that is an underlying thing, you know, but obviously there's not going to be one cause, and that's the interesting thing. But certainly, you know, when you're in the UK, I don't know what the listeners think there, well, you know, and I guess everyone has their own opinion, but when you're in the UK and you compare to the other cities and countries on the continent in Europe, you know, I always get a feeling like the UK people have had it pretty hard done by, you know, the average punter over there. It seems like, you know, you've got the wealthy that are extremely wealthy, and you've got everybody else that, you know, you can't even get a decent meal, you know, unless you go down to the greasy spoon. You feel like puking once you've been there. To me, there's a big distance between the cost of mediocre stuff in the UK compared to just going across the channel to the continent. Mm. Does that kind of thing have an effect on this? Possibly. You know, I think The Guardian also, back in 2010, and there's a link to it from this particular article I was citing earlier, that shows that London is the most standout city in the Western world for having the most rich compared to the most poor, and it kind of put a factor in there that the most rich in London were like 270 times more wealthy than what the poor, how it classified the poor. Now, putting things into a scale and perspective like that, I suppose if it was going to say anything on this, you know, because we're all guessing from the other side of the world, so it's all observations, but it would be, don't just look at the retaliatory aspects of what the politicians are saying. Don't just look at the tactics that are going to be used, or the shock and horror of those that are committing these, you know, outbursts of anger. But look at the root causes, you know, because that's where the solutions will be found. If people have to kind of wade through listening, perhaps, to what, you know, the youth are saying that fueled them, well, then that's got to be a good thing. Might be, too, that, you know, there are anarchistic or criminal elements that are exploiting the situation. You know, that happens as well. So it's not all just straightforward, is it?
And I think also there needs to be pointed out that there's a difference between trying to look at, you know, a root cause in a social context for what's going on, as opposed to looking for, you know, an excuse or a justification. I think you could, you know, you could disagree with, as I think most people generally do, that, you know, with the kind of, that there's any political motivation necessary for most people on the ground who are breaking into stealing shoes from Foot Locker, but that doesn't preclude the possibility of there being something behind it, you know, that's been driving this as a force over the long time. But if we switch to a different topic now, Sal, and moving closer to home, as we head towards the elections later in this year, we've heard about the Mana Party's manoeuvring this week. Sue Bradford has publicly sort of announced she wants to be, she wants to stand for Mana. It's yet to be decided officially, that's how I understand it.
Yes, that's right. Yeah, it does seem like that's the case. It looks like Sue Bradford, as a person who's made a career out of welfare advocacy, you know, I shouldn't say, put it another way, an activist in that welfare area and advocating, you know, a better lot for people that are dependent on welfare. It makes sense to Sue Bradford, obviously, to campaign and be a candidate in the Waitakere electorate where Paula Bennett is. She's the Minister of Social Welfare and what have you, so there's a logic there, and she'll be taking her on, you know, front on with policies, obviously. And Mana as a party has got to accept that, and I understand that Sue Bradford's got the support of the Mana branch out there in that electorate, so it looks like it possibly would be a deal. I know that, you know, what we're seeing is, I think, generally with the Mana Party is an entity that is formed around a need. I don't believe that the Labour Party, while it was in government, was, really focusing on those who were, you know, in the lower socioeconomic area, but also it didn't really focus on some of the fundamental areas of workers' rights. And Helen Clark, you know, with Working for Families, for example, as Prime Minister, she said very clearly that the policy was designed for those families and those people who are progressing as opposed to being dependent on welfare. So this Mana Party, it does seem to have identified very clearly a potential niche there, maybe, that is outside of just Māoridom, that is, it is obviously a party that is determined to have representatives from different ethnicities. John Minto, for example, is one of the vice presidents of the party, yet to be shown what kind of list positions they will have. But, you know, Hone Hariwera, John Minto and Annette Sykes in the top three. Looks like Willie Jackson may be seduced into standing in Tamaki Makaurau. You've got Sue Bradford clearly having a go there. So it's an interesting party, and it's kind of people that, you know, they state what they believe, and they usually have their version of what a solution is to a problem. So it might gel with a few people. Underlying that too, I think, Will, is, the Unite Union is well and truly obviously in behind the Mana Party, yeah, with Matt McCartan being instrumental in forming it and strategically placing it where it is. And that's significant. Unite Union had picked up, you know, where there was a void in the union marketplace, if you like, and where those unions were affiliated to the Labor Party while it was in government and were reticent to kind of advance the, you know, arguments for their members. Unite kind of poached them and formed a whole new union that was not aligned to the Labor Party. You know, it's got to be a good thing. It's an interesting election in that respect to see how the numbers fall, you know, in the specific electorates where these candidates are going to be focusing their attention. And it might just play a part, perhaps not necessarily obviously in a government immediately, but in policy developments in the bigger parties like we've seen with the Greens, if the party continues to exist.
And I suppose if we're looking at kind of the dominant narrative of New Zealand politics of the recent past, with Labour, you know, and under that government, I suppose, becoming almost a soft national in some aspects, and people talk about, you know, at that time, the demise of the alliance, on the left. And I suppose this is... Yeah. Further down the track, the re-emergence of something like that kind of party.
Yeah, well, it's needed on the left. You know, you've got the ACT Party advancing ideological arguments, you know, that kind of sits in the right of the National Party, clearly, and connects to that. And in the left, you know, Labour is a broad tent. It tries to hold that centre ground with, you know, free trade kind of policies and neoliberal kind of market policies at its core, while trying to actually stretch across with social development type policies into the centre left. So, you know, a Mana Party and a Green Party in tandem can be a complement to a Labour led type of arrangement. Whether or not that settles into a pattern like that where voters kind of understand that kind of dynamic and therefore make it a force that could potentially rule, you know, govern the country, well, that remains to be seen. It might be a bit early for such things in this election, but perhaps in the one after.
Well, we'll have to wait and see. Thank you for joining us for another week, Selwyn.
Yeah, okay, mate.
And hopefully John will be back next week to chat to you on Thursday.
Okay, well, see you soon.